If you need to contact Narcotics Anonymous or are interested in our sponsorship Behind the Walls program, please contact ARSC Regional H&I, P.O. Box 1351, Phoenix, Arizona 85001. NA literature can be found on the tablets in the Adovo app by searching for Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous does not endorse and is not affiliated with the tablet manufacturer, the software, or the institution.
All right. Thank you for joining us today for a Narcotics Anonymous recovery discussion. My name's Ryan. I'm an addict. Today we have Jim W. from Phoenix, Arizona. We're just going to talk a little bit about his recovery, what his process was like, and you know, what led him to Narcotics Anonymous and what it's like now. So how you doing, Jim?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for joining us. I know been trying to set this up with you for a little while, and I'm just really excited to hear you share parts of your story and the things that drove you to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. So, you know, one question that I have for you is, you know, what led you to Narcotics Anonymous? Was it your experience with CPS, or was it something else?
My case with CPS helped propel me towards Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I, being an addict, my kids were raised by me and their mom, who's also an addict, and completely neglected. All I ever wanted for my kids was everything that I never had and everything they ever wanted. But unfortunately, I couldn't even take care of myself. And so CPS came to the house and said they were taking the kids. And at that moment, I realized that, you know, I was not the best option for those kids. And, you know, things went downhill from there. It got violent after the kids left the house. And a couple days later, the family court judge said I would never see my kids again. That's kind of what propelled me to NA, because, you know, as addicts, I went home, I did everything I could to die, and it didn't work. And somehow I ended up in, I like to call it a detox ward, but it was a mental health ward. And that's, you know, I didn't even show up then with the intention on getting clean, but I did see a little glimmer of hope in getting my kids back. And so, you know, I stuck with it through the detox. I ended up going to rehab, and CPS started to look really favorably on that. Still have my problems with CPS. I don't like being told what to do. And so eventually I found Narcotics Anonymous and realized I'd been clean so long, I might as well just stick with it. And so, yeah. I remember, I don't know, did you want to ask the next question?
Well, I'm just curious, like, were you, you said you went to a detox, a yeah, mental health ward unit, whatever it was. How long were you there for?
I was in detox for 2.5 weeks, and I really don't have any idea how I got there. I just, to be honest, I just tried to commit suicide. Just tried to kill my ex-wife too. And finally reality hit me. I don't know if it was reality or what it was, but I just knew that it ended up back in the same place doing the same thing that I always ended up in. And I needed to walk away again. And I'd never been to detox before. I'd never been to rehab. I don't go to hospitals and you know, complain or whine about what's going on with me. But somehow I ended up walking the 6 miles and walked in told them this big long story about how I just tried to commit suicide, and I may have left out the part about the ex-wife, and somehow I ended up in a detox slash mental facility. I kept wanting to call it detox, but they don't lock three steel doors behind you when you go to detox.
Right. So when you were done with the facility, what did you go right back home or are you?
Well, so when I was in detox, after 3 days, they told me that I was detoxed and I needed to go home. And I realized that that was the first time I had actually put 3 whole days together in probably a decade of not using. And I still hadn't figured it out. I still couldn't figure out why I used and kept ending up in the same spot. And so I got really honest with the lady and told her that, if you guys make me leave here, I only got one place to go, and that's right where I just came from. And I don't want to go back there. And she understood that. And so she let me stay until they could find a bed for me at some sort of facility. Now, I'm a veteran, so they got facilities all over the United States. And so, yeah, I voluntarily stayed for the next 2 weeks.
So when did you first go to a meeting?
Well, I don't know that they really count because I don't remember them, but they brought meetings into the hospital. And, me being me, I wanted to tell them all about my addiction and how mine was so much worse than theirs. And so I don't know that I was really there for the right reason. And then when I got to rehab, it was mandatory that you had to go to three anonymous meetings a week. And so I kind of started going there, but I really wasn't a member. I was just kind of going. And it wasn't until I had 6 days clean that I decided that I have 6 days clean. I'm going to let this one ride. And I've kind of taken the whole that mentality in my whole recovery. And I got my clean date is January 9th, 2012. And I haven't had to use since. And
So what was the process like with getting your kids back?
that was kind of bumpy. I think I mentioned I don't like being told what to do. And to tell you the truth, I wanted my kids back with all my heart, but I still didn't think that I was still the best choice for them. After you get clean and the little pink cloud goes away, you start to look inwards, and I still didn't like what I saw. And so I mean there's a couple different ways to look at that. I really didn't like what I saw. But I called CPS. They were actually calling me and saying, "Hey, congratulations on being clean. We need you to do a few more things in order for you to get your kids." And then they started going over this list and tasks and tarot and doing things. And I just kept telling them no. Like at that point, I kind of enjoyed my recovery and I wasn't doing it to get my kids back. I wasn't doing it for anything else. I was doing it because I was finally starting to like the way I felt inside. And so I told them, no, I'm not doing it for that. And they said, well, if you don't do these things, you don't get your kids back. And I said, that's fine. And they didn't like that answer. They said, can we at least send? They sent therapists over. I don't know if they're therapists or counselors or whatever, but they were sending three over a week, one for the children, one for me, and then one as a family. And it was three different counselors. And I decided I could participate in that. I mean, it's not going to hurt anything. And then from there, I just, recovery taught me to be myself, quit trying to be somebody else. And I was just myself. Which was not always a good thing, but the state liked that more than trying to pretend that I was just doing. I don't like jumping through hoops, and I realized real quick that if you keep jumping through hoops, the state's going to invent more hoops. And so I just kind of did it my way. I followed the suggestions of my sponsor. I followed the suggestions of people in meetings. I understand the state needs to see some things to make sure that the kids are safe. And I definitely demonstrated that, but I kind of did it my way. And the state actually preferred that. I watched people struggle. You know, one of the reasons I didn't want to get into it, I watched people struggle for years trying to get their kids back. And every time they would accomplish this goal, the state would come up with another goal. And I didn't want to do that to my kids, and I didn't want to do that to me. Ironically, I got clean, and they gave my kids back 8 months off paper. And, but, you know, being in recovery, and I don't want to turn anybody off of this, being in recovery, nobody still taught me, still didn't know how to be a father. I was still just learning how to be a human being again. And so I went through my own struggles with that. And that's where CPS became pretty helpful, was they could step in and help me as long as I'm willing to admit that, you know, there's a problem. And I did that, and I sent over counselors. And, you know, there was a long time of my kids lived in my house, but I didn't want to be part of their lives because I was afraid they were going to get screwed up like I did. And I didn't want that for them. And so, you know, I kind of used CPS for what I thought the purpose they served, and it worked for me. I can tell you right now that, and I probably shouldn't tell you this, but, you know, you can tell those people no, and it's okay. And you can express yourself the way you are as a person, and that's okay. Because now they know what they're working with. I watched so many people pretend to be something that they weren't, and they never got their kids back. And
I was going to ask you, you know, when you said CPS wanted you to do this, or they said you need to do that, and you told them no, I was curious if part of that was because you had mentioned earlier, like, you felt you were doing a disservice to your children. Do you feel like there was fear involved with that? Like, you were afraid if you were going to get your kids back that you could cause them further harm, or was it something else? I mean, I imagine having kids, I don't have kids. So I imagine there's this fear of doing something wrong or raising them wrong and the results being catastrophic, so to speak, you know?
Well, I think every parent goes through that at some level. You know, something could go wrong really quick, and there's always that fear. You know, I have a past, and I always had this fear that my past was going to catch up with me and my kids were going to have to pay that price. I don't know that there was that fear. I was pretty realistic with myself in the fact that I don't know how to be a parent. And I didn't know how to talk to my kids. You know, for the last 9 months to a year of my using, I blame my kids for my using. And I didn't know how to not do that yet. And so there was part of that. And then the other part is, you know, I really don't like being told what to do. I, you know, every time I got arrested, I made it much, much, much worse. Because I don't have the ability to shut up or follow orders. Even getting arrested, I think I should get arrested my way. And so there was this part, like I was actually trying to do something, and then somebody is going to step in and tell me I have to do it their way, when truth is I didn't use today. So why are you going to go messing with that? Like, now you're going to change my whole direction. I felt good getting clean for me. I definitely, you know, I wasn't one of those people. I didn't get clean to get my kids back. I didn't get clean to get a girl back. I didn't get clean so my family liked me. I got clean because if I didn't get clean, I was going to kill myself. And and I'd already felt the one way. I want to see what it feels like to go the other way.
So if you don't mind me asking, you don't have to get too much in detail, but like, what was the relationship like with the kid's mother during this process?
Oh, we hate each other. I mean, that hasn't changed. I mean,
but was there communication like, hey, we got to get the kids back?
None. In fact, I did it all myself. I put in the work. I'm the one who got clean. I'm the one who went to the court dates. I'm the one who did all this stuff. I'm the one who talked to the counselors. And then when I got the kids back, she showed up at the door like we should all be a big happy family again. And that wasn't going to happen. But the truth is, me and her never really liked each other, but we were perfect for each other in addiction. And the truth is, I don't got to live like that no more. And my kids don't have to live like that anymore. She's still part of their lives. When my kids allow her to be.
Okay.
But I have absolutely nothing to do with that woman. I don't want to hear about her. I don't want to, that's your mom. You go hang out with your mom and keep that shit to yourself.
So I know you said that you didn't have any experience with being a father. And I'm just curious, like, where did you gain that from? Because I mean, things have changed now. Did you find that example from other men in recovery, or did you find it somewhere else?
I found examples of that from guys in recovery, but I still didn't, like, I would hear the stories of what they would do with their kids or how well they did with their kids, but I didn't know how to do that stuff yet. And to be honest with you, I didn't want to look weak and go asking people questions like, how did you do that? Why did you do that? What motivated you to do that? Don't get me wrong. I wanted to do those things. But I don't know, I'm a dude, so stuff gets stuck in my head and it doesn't want to come out of my mouth sometimes. To be honest with you, it was working the steps is when everything changed. You know, I'd met a girl in Narcotics Anonymous. Wasn't rehab love, but it wasn't far from it. And I fell in love with her, and it's the first time I really fell in love. And the truth is, I realized in that relationship that I do love her. I just don't know how to love her. And so that relationship ended really, really badly. I mean, really badly. And I blame that woman for everything, just like I did every other woman before her. But I learned some principles along the way. And during our relationship, like, I practiced all those principles with her. But there have been people waiting in my life forever, especially my kids, who've been waiting a long time for me to practice some of those principles with just them. And so I was sitting in a meeting one day, and in our readings, it says we learn to practice these principles in all our affairs. And so in order to get out of this insanity that I was in coming out of this relationship, I started practicing those principles with other people around me, such as my kids and my mom, my friends, and life got like ultimately better. Like my life, like the rest of my addiction was with, when I was with that woman, it was one focus. And today I get to practice those same principles with everybody in my life. And I had friends and we'd all hang out, but we were all new in recovery and we didn't know a lot about practicing principles. We kind of knew what the steps were. And I'm tell you the truth, we were all chasing women too. So
I think that really stood out to me just now, because, you know, for me, it's easy to show up for Narcotics Anonymous. It's easy to show up for the people in Narcotics Anonymous. But am I doing that with my family? Am I doing that with my girlfriend? Am I doing that with the people that I love and care about? And yeah, that definitely rung true to me. There's some areas that I need to work on. I guess we're not ever going to get perfect, but we're a work in progress, you know? You know, making amends and building a relationship with your kids, what was that like? Was it a process of your recovery? Was it an eighth and ninth step? Was it something else?
I don't know that it was the eighth or ninth step. Working the steps with my sponsor, you know, and I think this would be true with every parent. You know, the only amends you can really make are living amends. And the only way to make amends is to change behavior. And that doesn't happen overnight. Like, you have to be consciously aware. We talk about in the sixth step where we list all our character defects. And then the seventh step, we start to see our shortcomings, the actions that come from those character defects. And so and to this day, I mean, I raised five kids on my own. To this day, I still have character defects that come out, and they become shortcomings. And I'm pretty selfish, especially when it comes to money. And you know, everything in my life is mine, because I made it from nothing. But the truth is, I got five kids and they're all welcome to it. So part of my living amends was to, when interacting with my children, that sounds gross, but that's what it comes down to. You know, whenever me and the kids are hanging out, I have to be aware that I don't have to protect myself from them. I don't have to treat them like somebody off the street. I don't have to be scared they're trying to get my stuff. Now, my kids have stolen from me, and I'm not saying they're not trying to get my stuff, but I don't have to treat them like they're doing it. Maybe because I treat them like that is the reason they took my stuff. I don't know that. But today, like I said, I have a pretty good relationship with my children. You know, two are older. Well, they're all older now. My youngest just turned 18 and is about to graduate high school. Three of them have moved out. I have one grandson. I have another grandson on the way. I talk to every one of my kids on a daily basis, even though they don't live with me anymore. I like doing things with my kids. I don't know when this is coming out, but you know, tomorrow morning we leave on a family trip and we're all going to Magic Mountain. Like, I couldn't even leave the neighborhood. And God forbid I see those kids, and we're all going to get in one car and we're going to drive to Magic Mountain and we're going to have fun. And I actually find enjoyment in these things now.
I'm glad you touched on that because that was what I was going to ask you now, what it's like being a father, being a father in recovery. What's the balance like? I mean,
So, sometimes to this day, it still doesn't seem like I'm the father. Half the time, it seems like I'm more of a father figure. I have to remember the fact that, you know, my kids were raised at least half their lives in my addiction. The younger ones, don't remember as much, but the older ones definitely do. And so, you know, rebuilding that relationship, I don't think it was ever going to look, you know, like Leave It to Beaver or anything like that. There's always some damage that's been done. And the truth is, I was always raising my kids to be independent and to be self-supporting. And when you do that, you give up some sort of that Leave It to Beaver moment, you know what I mean? And so there's other times where I feel like a great father. I can think of one story right off the top of my head. My oldest son, who's 21 now, I was a couple years clean, and even though I got clean, I didn't stick around. I wasn't even close to being a full-time father. I was always gone, either chasing girls or being a service or being at a meeting or doing something. And I was still spending very little time with my children. And at the end of the school year, my son came to me and he showed me all these certificates. Like, he brought home like 18 certificates. He won every, you know, thing he could win, certificate nationally and for the state and for his district. And those were academic and sports things. And my son was really, really proud, and he really wanted to show me. And as a dad, I was really, really proud of him. But as an addict, I couldn't wait to go tell everybody what a great fucking parent I am. And it occurred to me, and it was a very humbling moment for me, that I realized that kid did every one of those on his own. Like, all I did was wake him up for school. I didn't help him do his homework. I didn't help anything. I didn't. He did all of that on his own. And I don't get to go to a meeting and tell everybody what a great parent I was, because I didn't do shit. It was very humbling and made me realize I need to start spending more time with my kids. And so I kind of laid off service in the program. I started dating like half as many women. When you're new in recovery, that's kind of a big deal. And everybody wants to feel wanted. And eventually that became a problem too, but that's a whole different podcast. And so, yeah, I started taking my kids. I had five kids, and so it's really, it's really hard to spend time with all five kids at once without your character defects coming out. So I had to start taking my kids one at a time, and once a week we'd go bowling. And and we started doing other things. We'd go out in the pool and we'd start swimming till the kids started fighting. We'd go on walks. We'd go to the park. We'd go, but I had to start spending time with my kids. And a lot of people say, well, that's great. You're showing them that you love them. But, I think at least in the beginning, it felt like it was doing more for me than it was for them. And now, as the years have gone by, my kids now remember that, and they remind me of all the good things. And so, when I got to recovery, I didn't have any good memories to fall back on. But over the years, I got some really great memories now.
That's all part of the living amends process too,
Yeah.
making those new memories, spending time with the kids. So before we wrap up today, I just wanted to ask you if you had any words of encouragement, possibly for the men or women that are incarcerated that may be struggling with similar issues, dealing with CPS, dealing with addiction, being separated from their families, anything that you'd like to share with them?
So, one of the things I've come to realize in my recovery is that some of the worst things that ever happened to me turned out to be the best things that ever happened to me. And they may not feel that way at the moment because life is hard. But my sponsor always told me, if I'm willing to put in the work, then I'm going to experience a freedom like I've never felt before. And so far in recovery, that has been true. One day CPS came and took my kids, and they told me I would never see them again. And that was the worst thing that ever happened to me up until that point. And as a result of that, somehow I found Narcotics Anonymous. Somehow I managed to stay clean. Somehow I managed to get over myself and follow directions. And today I live a pretty good life. There was no way I was ever going to get married again. I found a woman I want to spend the rest of my life with. In fact, she's got two kids, so now I'm a father of seven. Man, that's a lot. But, so no matter what you're going through right now, it's not the end of the world. It's not permanent. I mean, as long as you're willing to put in the work, it changes. I can't say it gets better because you won't know that till we get all the way to the end. I know it's been different. I have my ups and downs. Sometimes I still don't like myself, but as long as I don't use, I have a chance to like myself tomorrow. And that's my experience.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing with us today. It was a pleasure having you participate in this, and I'm sure that the people that are incarcerated are going to take the time and listen to it and enjoy what you had to say. So we appreciate you, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you would like to speak directly with a member of Narcotics Anonymous, please contact our phone line at 833-244-4255. 844-991-AZNA. Again, that's 844-991-2962.